ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the polyspeak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
The family trust. If you've got one, you're probably doing pretty well. Been used for generations to distribute wealth. Now the government's moving to make sure they give more back to the tax office. Today, Kristen Sobeck, a tax expert at the University of Canberra, on the new tax on trusts. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Kristen, family trusts, very few Australians have them, right? But if you do, the chances are, you know, you're pretty wealthy. You're doing pretty well.
That sounds about right. So in theory, what we know is that anyone who's willing to pay the upfront costs and annual fees of having one can have one. But in practice, what we know is that it's the top 10% of wealthiest households that received the most trust income.
Yeah, and apparently there are about, what, a million trusts in Australia.
Thereabouts.
And of course, they have been around for ages, right?
That's right. So one story that we know is that they started in medieval England. And when a knight would go off to fight in a battle, someone would need to look after the land. And so the knight would transfer legal control to a trusted party that we'd call the trustee, with the intent that the trustee would look after the land, but also that the income generated from it would benefit the knight. So if you will, historically, it was a way to separate legal ownership from the benefits that individuals would get from the income generated from it. And they've been used ever since. In the 1970s, my understanding is they started to grow as a consequence of different legal changes that cut off certain tax benefits. And so from the 1970s and 1980s, what we see is a growth in the use of trusts.
Okay. And we know, of course, Kristen, that some really rich Australians have these trusts, like the mining magnate Gina Rinehart, because sometimes families end up in courts fighting over them, don't they?
That's right, they do. But it's not just the Gina Rinehart. It's also, we know that quite a few tradies, doctors, lawyers, consultants, farmers, and even some academics with some side hustles also use them.
All right, now just tell me, how much money do you need to set one of these up?
So I think at the bare minimum, you probably need a couple of $1,000 to set it up. And then there are ongoing annual fees that are going to vary as a function of the complexity. And the sky's the limit, I think, in terms of the complexity of these structures, because you can not only have just one trust, but trusts that feed into trusts, that feed into companies, that loop back around. So they really can get quite complex.
It's a legal structure, though. Just explain it a bit more for me, because I don't really understand them. You can put property in there, shares, what, businesses? Just explain how they work in that sense.
So you can even put labor income into a trust. So the trust, you can think of it as like a bucket, and you can transfer money into the bucket from any source. So in the bucket, you can have shares, you can have a business, any type of asset that you'd like, real estate. And again, kind of going back to medieval England, the bucket is kind of the collection of assets, and then the beneficiaries are the one that get the income that's generated by these assets.
Okay, and it is important to know that there's these two types of trust. There's a fixed trust and a discretionary trust. And the discretionary ones, these are the ones that the government in the budget wants to tax more.
That's right. Discretionary trusts have a lot more flexibility. They provide flexibility not only in terms of who you can distribute money to, but also when. So it can change from year to year in terms of the who and the when. This bucket of assets is going to generate income. And then the trustee, who's kind of the one carrying the bucket, gets to determine who they distribute the income generated from these assets to. So I guess a simple example, let's assume that someone generates money in this bucket worth about $109,200. Very precise number, I've picked it for a reason, but it's about what a teacher in New South Wales would earn. She's going to pay, on average, about 22% of her income in tax. So that's about $23,548. Now, if we move over to the Smith family, has six members, and they also have $109,200, but this money has been generated within their trust. Now, what they can do is actually distribute $18,200 to every single one of the family members. So grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, the son, and the daughter, and they will pay no tax because the trust allows them to actually take advantage of each one of these individual family members' tax-free thresholds.
Right. Okay. So if you're good at maths or you've got a good accountant and you've got a fair few assets, a trust is a great way to reduce your tax bill.
Correct. It provides a lot of flexibility.
You describe it as a tax breakfast buffet. Explain that.
I call it a breakfast buffet because there are different advantages and disadvantages in the personal and the corporate income tax systems. And by using the structure of a trust, individuals actually get to pick the best parts of both. And so when you think about the personal income tax system, individuals with this type of income can take advantage of the tax-free threshold and the 19-cent rate. But an extra layer of complexity is when a company can be a beneficiary. So in the Smith family, let's say that the family generates more income than the teacher, they would still distribute $18,200 to every single one of their family members. So grand, grandpa, mom, dad, the son and the daughter. But everything else, they would distribute to the company. What's beneficial about that is a small company only pays 25% corporate income tax. So rather than the higher 30% personal income tax rate or the 45-cent rate.
Okay. And as you said, it only costs a couple of $1,000 to actually set up a trust, but you need to have a fair few assets to make it worthwhile, right? That's why only wealthy people really have them.
That's right. That's right. It needs to be worth the benefits to actually set one up.
We'll also introduce a minimum 30% tax rate on capital gains from July next year and on discretionary trust from July the year after. This is about better aligning the taxes paid on these types of income with the taxes paid on wages.
The Treasurer's higher taxes aren't economic reform. They're an assault on aspiration. They're an attack on the wealth creation that benefits all. They will crush the reward for hard work spirit that underpins our nation's success.
I have to now sit back as a business owner and ask myself, do I want my children to come in and take over my business? I mean, what am I in business for if I'm paying more tax?
All right, well, Kristen, let's consider then the changes now that the government is bringing in. From 2028, it will begin taxing these discretionary trusts at a minimum 30% rate. Does the government think that will even up the system, does it?
Well, I think the intent is, if you take my example of the Smith family, so before, our teacher in New South Wales, she was paying about 22% of her income in income tax. With this new change, the Smith family now has to pay 30% tax. So I think the idea here is what they're trying to do is say, right, two families that have the exact same amount of income are now going to be paying a lot more similar amounts of tax.
Yes. Okay. And the government says it will make out of this new tax $4.47 billion by 2029-30. That's huge, right? How did they come up with that figure?
Good question. I think that'll be a question for some of the people in Treasury who did the modelling. But one challenge I think with this is that we know that people who have these structures are well-resourced and that they are likely to change their behaviour. So if I had to guess, the revenue estimates are maybe a bit optimistic. I do think they'll be revenue positive, but just how positive, the proof will be in the pudding. So specifically what I suspect might happen is that some people really value the use of trusts because they do provide asset protection. And those people may continue to use trusts even despite these changes. This might especially be the case for those who are on that 45-cent personal income tax rate, because the 30% is still less than this 45-cent personal income tax rate. But for others who really are just using trusts as a form to tax minimize, this reform is really going to make that much less lucrative. And so for them, what I suspect they may do is take their company from outside of the trust and leave it kind of as a company, a small business company or a small company outside of the trust.
Right.
So for smaller companies, it'll be the 25% rate.
Right. Okay. And the government might not get its $4.47 billion in that case.
We'll see.
We'll see. All right. Now, just to note, and this is important, of course, that there are quite a lot of farmers in Australia that use trusts. And there was so much concern, wasn't there, that they might get caught up in this tax change. Now, they have been exempt. Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess it's my personal view that I think this is largely a political concession, though I remain open to emails from your listeners to convince me otherwise.
Okay, well, the CEO of the National Farmers Federation, Mike Guerin, he says that the family farm trust, they really represent a family's life savings and their retirement plan. So that's its argument.
Farming fundamentally in Australia is a family business, and being able to transfer assets from generation to generation and not be caught by debilitating taxes around trusts and capital gains is critical to not losing farming in its current state over the next generation. And that was delivered tonight.
Kristen, those with trusts who will be affected by this change, they might argue that they have every right to protect the wealth that their families have created over generations, right? That they've paid a fair amount of tax across the years and that the trusts enable them to fairly distribute their wealth. Is that not a fair argument?
I mean, oh, this is a hard question, Sam. I guess to answer your question, I'll use a metaphor that the way I see the current reforms that the government has introduced is they're cleaning up our house. So all of the reforms they've introduced relate to reforming the personal income tax base. But what Australia's tax system really needs is a renovation. And it needs a renovation because it was constructed based on a lot of history over time with exemptions and carve-outs. And in an era when the superannuation system was nowhere near as mature as it is, times have changed, and we need to make our tax system not only more efficient, but also more fair. And so to them, I would say that these reforms are about making that system both more efficient for growth, so that Australians can benefit from economic gains that an efficient and equitable tax system engenders, but also more equitable.
All right, so given that, do you think then the government has actually gone far enough?
Well, I think this is the first step in what I hope will be a bigger agenda moving forward. Over the longer term, what we really need is to lighten the load on our personal income tax base. So what we really need the federal government to do in the future is to lighten the load on workers and look to reforming the GST. Now, alongside that, what we also need is for the state and territory governments to step up and do their part on property tax reform, because they're the ones that actually control the levers to one of the greatest sources of wealth that's ripe for taxation. So combined, I think if the federal government does its part in the future, lightening the load on workers and looking at the GST, and the state and governments do their part, then I think that would also open the door for the federal government to lower the tax on savings.
All right. And Kristen, what do you think? Is this the beginning of the end of the family trust? As you say, they've been around since the Middle Ages, so they passed their use-by date, do you think?
I think they'll continue to persist. When we look internationally, trusts still exist, but I don't think they'll be quite as ripe for tax minimization as they are now.
Kristen,
Kristen Sobeck is a tax researcher and economics lecturer at the University of Canberra. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.